Hey, everyone. If you're hearing me instead of Earl Strickland or Tyler Steyer in the introduction, you know that there's probably an announcement coming. This is going to be no different. So back on January 13th for the episode for the podcast, I had kind of asked for help from the listeners to really implement, I guess, what I'll call phase one of the podcast's direction in the near future. And that was basically to, I want to get away from sponsors. I want to get away from sponsors to the podcast for a lot of the reasons that I have in the 13th. So if you haven't heard that, head over to January 13th and listen to the introduction for that podcast. But so what I said in that introduction for that episode was I was really hoping to, I guess, expand out the podcast as much as I possibly can over the next few months. I'm in kind of a weird spot in my life where I'm in school and I'm going to be finishing up very soon. And I have a lot of different directions that I could go, both in life and with this podcast in general. So I am kind of going all in on trying to build something close to sustainable so that if and when I'm able to get out of school and have the opportunity to work a normal 9-to-5 job, like normal America, I'm trying to set myself up to possibly not have to do that, or at least not have to do that in the traditional sense. And I want to not have to do that more or less because I want this to be what I do going forward. I would love to be able to help the game grow in the ways that I see possible by what I've built thus far, both by myself and with the help of the co-hosts and the fans themselves. Because when I put this kind of challenge out to the listeners is, far as, you know, sharing to your friends, getting it out on your Facebook page or on AZ Billiards or anything like that, the response was crazy. We've actually added about 75 to 175, somewhere in that range, new listeners in just the last 3 weeks. There's no way I could have done that. Well, I didn't do any of that. I mean, that was completely all the listeners helping out and supporting the cause of expanding the podcast and getting that out there. So I cannot thank everybody enough. And that is also why I wanted to kind of help give back and at least do something for the people who are doing the work, which is why we're doing the little competition for the Moscone Cup magazine and a couple of other smaller prizes. So I thank everybody so much for all that effort and ask that if you are willing to continue to keep it up so that we could try to get expanded as much as possible over the coming weeks and months. But with that is kind of phase one. And if there's one thing that I like to do, especially with this podcast, I like to be extremely transparent. There's a lot of sketchy promoters out there, or there at least has been in the past in the world of pool, and I'm trying not to be one of them. I am trying to be as transparent as I possibly can with the direction that I see the podcast going and my decisions and my reasonings for my decisions. So phase one of, I guess, this all-in kind of balls-to-the-wall expansion of the podcast was just that, trying to get as many people out there listening to the podcast or the content on the Facebook page as possible. Phase two is now going to be an actual expansion of the content of this podcast. And this is going to be very unique in a sense that when I started this podcast, I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to edit audio. I didn't know how to produce shows. I didn't even know how to like promote or interview or anything like that. All of that I kind of taught myself along the way. I've had some growing pains. Anybody who's been around since the beginning knows that it hasn't always been a smooth ride, but I think that I'm to the point now where I'm able to do this well enough that it's not terrible. So if you disagree, please reach out, let me know. But what I want to do next is I want to expand the actual content for which the podcast puts out. And I want to do that basically using videos and live streams. So I've tossed around the idea of actually doing some live podcasts. I've tossed around the idea of doing many different things as far as at tournaments themselves, actually going there and doing live interviews with players or with the promoters, stuff like that. But to be able to do all of these things, there is going to be a lot more equipment that I'm going to need to purchase. There's a lot more travel expenses. There's a lot more funding that I'm going to need to have to be able to do some of these things. So I guess that kind of brings me to where I am right now, which is I have set up a YouTube channel. And with that YouTube channel, I plan on doing things in the future with not only some of this video content, but hopefully different advertising sponsorship possibilities that are going to be completely independent from the podcast. The podcast is going to be separate from that. But I hope that that will bring in some revenue as far as actually having people advertising on the YouTube page. Whether it will or whether it won't, I don't know. So actually, if there's anybody out there, the listeners that have any experience in this and could reach out to me and help guide me with some of this stuff, or just give me a couple, like, you know, loose advice or stuff, anything like that, that would be super appreciated. But the second way I'm hoping to create some sort of funding for the podcast is through the Patreon system. And for anybody who doesn't know what the Patreon system is, it is essentially basically somebody who supports content. The way that it's used now in, I guess, the podcasting and the video vlogging and lots of other different more X-rated ways of content these days is it's for people who want to basically support the things that they ingest. So the podcasting is always going to be free. I'm not changing that. I mean, I'm not even remotely interested in that. But it allows, if you so choose, this is not going to be required, and I'll talk more about that later, but it is not going to be required to partake in this. Basically, all it is it's a system that if you wanted to help support the content that I will be putting out, not only now and in the past, but also in the future, it's a way that you can set up a type of recurring donation, I guess, to the podcast monthly that allows you to, I guess, really help support and create the content that we're going to have going forward. So, and if you're already an expert in Patreon and you know what it is, the Patreon that's set up for the podcast is going to be patreon.com/queueitup. So Patreon is patreon.com/CUEITUP. So if you are already an expert in Patreon and you know kind of how it works and you're interested or willing to help out the podcast going forward, you can head over there without a link, which is exciting. If you're not, I will put a link out on the Facebook page itself. And if you so choose, you can head over there and you could set up a Patreon donation to the podcast. It will hopefully be in the future. I'm going to have tiers in the very, very near future. I need to think about how this is going to work out more in-depthly, but I am going to have probably a three-tiered system where the base tier is going to be basically like you just want to support the podcast in a small way. Maybe it's a couple bucks a month. Maybe it's a dollar. Maybe it's a quarter a month. Who knows? It's kind of whatever you so choose if you want to. The second tier will probably actually have a little bit of incentives for it. This might be anywhere from $5 to $10 a month or whatever I decide to choose. I need to talk to a few more people on this. But and this will actually have small perks that maybe you'll get a patch sent or a sticker or maybe a t-shirt after a couple months. You'll get a free t-shirt, something like that. That is basically a thank you for your willingness to support the podcast. And then I'm going to have a top tier. And this top tier is going to be a little bit more expensive. It's going to be basically people who are willing to, you know, really give and help support the podcast. And I think what I'm going to do for that is I'm actually going to, at a certain funding level, you will actually get to join the podcast and actually be a part of the podcast. Not only for individual episodes, but in some of the future planning, because if you're willing to really support the podcast at that level, I think your opinion for the podcast should truly matter. I mean, you truly have the podcast, and I guess the Cue It Up brand is as a whole, really, you really have the best interest of us in mind. So I think it'd be a good idea to bring you on, help make decisions towards the future, as well as actually joining some of the podcasts to basically give your opinions on stuff. So that's kind of it. The Patreon system, if you need a little bit more information on it, please do not hesitate to reach out. It's basically just a system that allows you to help to donate to some of the future content that the podcast will have. And hopefully I will be able to get out some really, really good stuff. And you'll feel like if you're willing to donate and invest in the future of the podcast, that you will be happy with it. And So if you don't want to, you absolutely do not have to. The podcast is still going to be free. Some people listen just because they like the information. They, you know, it's just kind of whatever to them. They're not super passionate about it. They just enjoy listening to it from time to time. That's totally fine. The podcast will still be free. You do not have to financially support it in any way. This is just for the people who want to help invest in the future of the podcast, to get out new content. Exciting new content, exciting new ventures that we can take on in the future, and all of that good stuff. So with that, we can actually get into the podcast. I won't take up any more time. But if you need any more information on anything, or just want to chat out some future strategies that you think the podcast should do to help make it more successful in the future, please do not hesitate to reach out to myself or the podcast or anybody on the podcast. So with that, here's the show.
I'm a real Bill. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
We are excited to have a new podcast today, and we're even more excited to be joined by Demetrius Gelatis for the first time. Demetrius, what's up?
Hey, what's going on?
And Rob, of course, you're here as well. We can't get rid of you.
You know, I've been feeling so good. I started playing pool again, pocket pool, about 3 weeks ago because my neck was so much better. So, yeah, I'm great. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be feeling good and not in pain playing pool again.
Well, you clearly have been spending less time around your wife because you sound happy.
Well, that's an absolute fact, and she will be the first one to attest to that.
Yeah. So I kind of hinted Demetrius is here for the very first time. As far as we don't know if you're going to be, I guess this will be entirely up to you going forward as to whether or not you want to be on for entire podcasts or just for the looking ahead, breaking down matches stuff. So we can talk about that off air going forward. But for the first one, at least, you're going to be here for the entire time. And we are going to be blessed with your analysis going forward, which, I mean, it's good to actually have somebody who knows what they're talking about instead of, an old schlub and some young guy who doesn't even know how to play the game.
Well, we've been told that by listeners.
It's true.
That why do they want to listen to a couple people that really aren't all that great? That's why Nate interviews people who are great.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Because we're not.
Yeah, so basically all that to say, Demetrius, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah, and you got to tell us about yourself, too. You got to tell us a little bit of history about, how old were you when you started pool, and how did you get to the point you are now? And a little bit about your life in general.
Perfect. So, yeah, I've had kind of two chapters of pool in my life, because when I started playing when I was probably 12 or 13, my dad got a 9-foot pool table in our basement. And I always liked games, and I was always competitive. And I played for about a year. And then actually what happened is my dad took me to a pool hall, and I didn't even know there was such a thing as a pool hall. In my world, I'd seen pool, bars or in people's basements, but I never really knew that there was a place where you could go and just have a room full of 9-foot pool tables. And my dad took me to this pool hall.
What was it? What was the name of it?
It was in Rochester, Minnesota. It was called All Star Billiards. And my dad took me there, and he was making small talk with the owner, and I was watching this guy pulling 9 balls out of the pockets, throwing them on the table, and running them in order again and again and again.
Wasn't great picks, was it?
No. And so actually I was watching him practice, and I was watching him run all these tables. And I mean, I've been playing a little bit at home with my dad, but I just had no idea that that was even possible playing pool. I mean, it was just, here I was 13 or 12, and I'd been playing for maybe a year off and on in the basement. And I mean, I watched what he was able to do, and something clicked in my mind. And I was like, I'm going to learn how to do that. And so then after that, I went completely nuts with pool. And I mean, without going too far down the rabbit hole, I mean, I was playing every day, all day, reading everything, watching every AccuStats video I could, reading every magazine I could, playing everybody I could possibly play that was better than me. And then I had them all sized up in terms of skill level from the, you know, top in town all the way down to the, you know, the average players. And I was trying to work my way up and learn everything that everyone could learn. And then I guess what was different though, when I was a kid, was that I really wanted to be the best player in the world. And that was absolutely my life focus. And the only thing I really thought about for about 5 years. And so I was playing, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours a day, every day. And I mean, I'm talking Christmas, New Year's, Easter, every day, weekends when people are doing other stuff, every day that cast, I'm like, this is where I get ahead of my competition because I want it more. And it wasn't all positive because I was obviously very devoted, which is the good part, but it wasn't necessarily real healthy or balanced and it wasn't really in a good spot. And so something kind of happened where I got fairly good, but there was a problem, which was that there were no top touring pros in Rochester, Minnesota. And so I learned to, you know, I got to the point where I was one of the better players in town. When I was 17, I was a very, very good player, but I was still a long way away from like Johnny Archers or something like that, or whoever was the top player at the time, because I just never really had access to playing world-class players. And so I got good enough to beat everybody around, but that doesn't really get you anywhere in the pool world. So at about that time, I had kind of a moment of clarity. And I'll tell you, this is maybe somebody finds this interesting. I don't know. I almost had like a vision or some kind of it was almost like I'd been fighting for the last 5 years to have this pro level pool game. And I felt like I was at an auction and I was bidding on a pro pool game. Like that's what was up for bid. And so the question is, well, what am I willing to pay to get it? And in the beginning, the bidding was just like a few hours after school. And then the bidding became my weekends and my evenings. And then it became, you know, all these other things that it started going higher and higher. And I was like, I don't care what it costs. I will pay anything to be able to play like that. And then I could see the way the bidding was going, which is that it was going to be any chance of having a career or a family or a house or a marriage and all these different things. And I saw where the bidding was going. And at the time I was so caught up in it, like, no, anything, I'll pay anything. And I was almost willing to pay my soul. And I found myself leaning forward, you know. And I should mention that the auctioneer was really kind of a sinister figure. So I don't know if you've ever seen it was like this, almost like this bad guy in a Disney movie, like some cloaked, tall, ominous figure that was running the auction. And I was just about ready to bid my soul. And then I just stopped for a minute and I looked around and I realized that there was like 100 or hundreds of other jackal-like lost souls in this room that were all leaning forward just as eagerly as me, willing to pay their soul for this pro pool game. And I looked at all these kind of lost souls that were bidding their lives. And then I looked up at this auctioneer, the sinister cowled auctioneer that just seemed to be deriving some kind of glee from all this. And I just, something snapped inside of me and I just stopped for a minute. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to sell my soul for this game. I'm not going to give my life for this game. And so I made the decision at that point that that's not what I was going to do for my life. That when I look back at my life, it was not, I was going to contribute more to the world. I was going to experience more in the world than shooting balls in a pocket. And it was a big, big change. It was an overnight change. And I didn't know what to do with my life. And I actually went on and kind of quit pool for a few years because I just was like, well, that's.
How old were you then?
Yeah, I was 18. And I was like, yeah, if I'm not going to be the number one in the world, then I don't know what I'm going to do with it. So why bother? So I quit playing for about 5 years because I had no other goal other than to be number one. And if I can't do that, then what's the point? So then a few years later, I'd been dating a girl. I broke up with this girl and I had a little extra time on my hands. I'm like, you know what? I'll hit some balls around. I used to do that. And I started playing again. But the biggest change was I knew when I picked up my cue again that I was not going to go all in. And so I flip-flopped it because when I was a kid, it was almost like there's two different questions. Where do you want to end up? What are you willing to do to get there? And when I was a kid, where do you want to end up was number one. And what am I willing to do to get there was anything and everything until I'm there. And then when I picked up the game again, I'm like, no, we're going to do this differently. Instead of deciding where I want to end up, I'm going to instead set a budget of resources. Here's what I'm willing to put in. And then with the resources I'm willing to put in, what can I get with them? What can I do with them? So instead of saying, this is what I'm going to get, I'll pay anything to get there. It's like, no, here's my budget. Let's see what that'll get me. And I had a budget of time and energy. Because at this point, you know, I wanted the family and I wanted a house and I wanted a career. And so I'm like, well, here's my budget of energy that I can put in. And so since then, that was probably, you know, a little over 15 years ago. So since then, I've operated on a budget and I've never gone all in on pool with that single-mindedness that, you know, the young European champs have. But what I have done is said, here's what I can put in. And I've put it in consistently, strategically, and I've done my best with it. And so I'm actually pretty proud of what I've accomplished, because while I'm not the best pool player in the world, and so I never accomplished that particular goal, but I am pretty proud of the fact that for somebody that has, you know, always had a job and kids and been a, you know, kind of living a more normal life, I'm fairly competitive at high levels of play. And I'm not sure there's a lot of people that have a job and a family that are beating me. You know what I mean? It's just most of the players that are levels above me have been full-time players their whole life and are touring and currently, you know?
Yeah. Well, let me give you an example of that, Demi. Just where you finished in the nine ball at the Derby. I'm looking at your finish. You have 24th place of, you know, over 300 players. And a few of the players that are in where you finished in that same group are players like Warren Kiamko, Mika Immonen, Ruben Bautista. I mean, and the players who finished one match higher, just one match, okay, were in the tournament one match longer, were Chris Melling, Misko Fortunski, Francisco Bustamante, Omar Al-Shaheen, Tyler Steyer, Jason Shaw, Josh Roberts. So, I mean, when you talk about if you've allotted this so much effort, money, and time, and to get to a place that I'm telling you, a lot of these players have got to that place where they are by devoting their whole life to it.
Yes,
and not had a family and a job and some other things too. So.
Well, no,
you've accomplished a lot.
Yeah, there's players that finished, you know, worse than I did that play better or that have more. But no, that's exactly right. Is that I'm proud. I'm very proud of what I've done with what I have to devote. But I also, you know, I'm not done, and I'd like to, of course, like everybody, I'd like to see if I can't just get a little bit better. I trade it all for just a little more.
Sure. I watched the match that eliminated you, I believe, from the nine ball.
Oh, the Omar. I played Omar Al-Shaheen. And so.
That match. I did. I watched that almost the whole match from the almost the beginning.
Yeah. And so I want to actually, there's a one story about that. So, but before I kind of go into that match, because I think there's a story that I think might, I know for me, when I think about like, what did I learn at this Derby and what's, you know, what can I take away to help me as a player? I'd like to share, because I think it might help other people on their journey too. Okay. But before I do, did that answer your question a little bit about my background as a player? And I guess other than that, I'll just say I've got three children and now I'm,
what do you do for a living then? What's your job?
I'm actually transitioning. I'm going to be coaching full time now. It's been going very well. I've got, I'll just leave it at that. It's been going very well. I've been enjoying it, and I've been making a difference for pool players. And so, yeah, I don't want to say too much because, I'm actually
okay.
Transitional state, and maybe by human resources department might be, scooping around to try to get, you know, have their insurance guy see if I'm out playing tennis ball when I'm supposed to be disabled or something. But anyway, it's not, the dust hasn't officially settled yet, but I'm definitely, I'm all in on the pool coaching. So,
okay. So that Minnesota's then will have three probably full-time pool coaches, correct?
Well, I don't really consider myself as doing the same thing as what anybody else around Minnesota does. So I don't think we're going to step on each other's toes.
Okay.
I have there's I we already did a podcast where I kind of went into it more, but I'll just say I'm not really giving lessons. I'm doing boot camps, and so I'm looking for people that are, you know, really, really serious that say, hey, I want to get to an I want to I don't want a pointer, I don't want a tip, I don't want to be told to hold my hand different. I
want
to
You want the guy that's like standing in front of a mask cloak debating as to whether or not he wants to sell his soul for the game of pool, right? That's what maybe not quite that, Mark, but
I'm looking for the people that are saying, hey, I've got this many years to compete. I've got this much time I can put into it. And I'll tell you, a lot of the people I talk to, you know, they're people like me that had to put pool in the back burner to work and family for a lot of years. And they've loved the game when they were kids. And maybe they want it now. They've got, you know, their kids are moving out. They've got a little bit more disposable income. They've got a little bit of time. And they're like, you know what? I've got room for my life for pool for once. But I never really got that great at it, or I don't really know how to get better. And I've been playing at this level for a long time. And, you know, when you're in your 40s and 50s and you haven't gotten better for 10 years and, you know, it can be the hardest part is believing it's possible to get better, but it absolutely is. So anyway, I get really passionate about it. I don't want to get carried away on that. I'll just say that what I'm looking for people that don't just want a pointer. They don't want a quick lesson. They don't want a quick tip. They want somebody that's going to partner with them and work with them and show them figure out where they want to be, figure out exactly what needs to change, help them diagnose their game, and then work with them on the table until they goddamn get there. And that's what I do. And so it's not really quite the same as, you know, what other people do. But anyway, yeah. But I'm not looking for people willing to sell their souls, but I'm looking for people that are motivated to get every, scrap of production out of their, and you know what, when you're on a budget, one thing I've learned, when you're on a budget for energy and time and engagement, you've got something that the top players don't have. You know, they've got unlimited resources because all they do is dump it into pool. But that leads to carelessness. And a lot of times they might just be like, well, I'll just kind of play a million hours and figure it out. Whereas when you don't have a million hours, you start to think of things and say, if I want to figure this out, I have to I have to be strategic with my time. And I have to really make sure that I'm investing it in the right areas. And so what I've learned is that by being focused and strategic and really making the hours count, that you might have a sense of urgency and a sense of focus that a lot of players don't have because they're just out sloppy living at a pool hall every day. And half these guys, man, I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, they're not necessarily degenerates, but half of them are kind of busted out, just hanging out at the pool hall all day playing because they're just adrift at sea. Pool doesn't really have a clear road for them. And so they're just hitting balls and panning back and forth the same $100 bill. And I'll tell you, man, if you get somebody that's been successful in their profession as a smart person that has focused energy, a clear goal, and some ambition, you might be surprised what you can do with a budget.
I agree.
So let me tell you this. I'll tell you the Derby story. Can I tell you the Derby story?
Yeah, go for it.
So I played this Omar El Shaheen, and Rob, you said you saw part of that. Well, the guy shoots better than me, to say it lightly. Warming up, this guy, just watching him warm up, it almost brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah, he pockets balls pretty steady.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I got a chance to sit ringside during a 10-foot match of Jason Shaw's. And, I mean, I watched Jason Shaw, and I saw his stroke and how powerful and accurate it was. I'll tell you, this Omar El Shaheen, I don't even have words. It was so beautiful. It was so powerful, accurate, and fluid and free. He was warming up. He was getting down on balls and casually one stroking balls in that I would have to like tape deep breaths and get on the ball and get off the ball. And, yeah.
That's
really,
what I saw.
Yeah. Stuff that I would have to grind in the pocket. Yeah. This guy shot it like they were all hanging. I mean, he was firing balls from elevated off the end rail, running balls down rails from jacked up across.
Oh yeah.
And just like they were just like they were stop shots. And I just, it was so inspiring to me.
Oh, but, yeah, it was fun to watch.
But it was also so I was in this weird spot because I was both inspired and discouraged. I mean, I was inspired that pool could be played like that, but then discouraged by the fact that I know that with the budget I have that, like, I just don't know that I'll ever play like that. I mean, I'm getting a little older, and I've got a budget, and I've got, 25 years of habits, and so this is – it's so to know that that level of pool is there, and that's what I always wanted to do.
Well, I think for sure you play at that level, but just not as often as he does. That's all.
Yeah, but there's Rob. But there are things that he can do physically that are just
right.
That are just beyond me. I mean, the same thing happened last year. I played Chris Melling. The guy hit the sickest draw shot. I didn't. I mean, it made a Mike Bassey look like. I don't even know. I mean, the guy just hit this draw shot that I didn't even think was playable, and he played it in a tournament game, and it worked. And I was like, anyway. So as I got a little discouraged, I'll tell you. This is the thought, and I made a post on AZ Billiards about this because I thought this was so kind of profound.
Okay.
I go back, and there's this joke about the two hikers that run into a bear in the woods. And so maybe you guys know this one, but I'll tell it because somebody in the audience doesn't know it. Two hikers walking through the woods, they run into an angry bear. And so one of the hikers gets, changes shoes. He gets over, and he starts putting on some running shoes. And the other guy says, "What are you doing? You can't possibly outrun that bear." And the first guy says, "Well, I don't have to. I just have to outrun you."
Yeah, of course.
And so it's a cheesy joke, but I like jokes about bears. I'm a kind of a bear guy. So anyway, I really think that this is super important because the bear in pool, the bear is perfection. The bear is Omar El-Shaheen. The bear is Jason Shaw. And when I get discouraged, there's a discouraging voice, a demotivating, a defeated voice that says, "You can't ever do that. You can't outrun the bear. You can't play as good as Shaw and Shane and Omar." And that's really discouraging because you know what? What a lot of people do is they try to argue with that voice. "Oh, yeah, yes, I can. I'll show them. I'll be the best." But you know what? But in your heart, you know. It's like, what?
You can't beat them.
Yeah.
It's like for me to try to convince myself that I can beat Jason Shaw. It's just not sensible. So on the other hand, though, I don't have to, because all I have to do is outrun the other guy. And the other guy is the guy that I was at Derby last week. And at Derby last week, I struggled at some times. I struggled with my nerves at times. I struggled with my stroke at times. My fundamentals broke down a little bit at certain times. And so between mental and physical breaking down at times, I didn't play. I'm actually kind of surprised I got as far as I did. My results were better than my play, in my opinion. But I definitely had some matches that didn't have to go my way, and I ground out a few close calls. And walking away from that tournament, I can do better than that. And so it doesn't matter if I can't ever play as good as Omar El-Shaheen, because what I can do, I can use him as a compass. I can use Shaw and Shane, and I can look at what I took away is how strong and powerful. I mean, you can watch it on YouTube, but it's totally different when you're ringside playing the guy and you just see the ease and accuracy with which they power these balls in. And I'm like, okay, I can't do that, but I can use that as a compass. And I never have to do that because all I have to do is do a little bit better than this guy that was falling apart last week. And if I could be a little bit less bad than I was last week, then maybe some year I take top eight or top four or whoever, So to me, that's a big deal. And I think that for a goal, goal setting, and I'm not going to go into goal setting as a new topic, but I'll just say goals, it's important that they're both inspiring, but believable. And I think that a lot of people set goals too low where they're not inspiring, and other people set goals too high where they're not believable. And I think that for me, setting a goal to be better than Omar El-Shaheen or Jason Shaw, that's inspiring, but it's not believable. But saying that I want to take steps that direction and be better than the guy I was last week, that's both inspiring and believable to me anyway. So I just wanted to share that because that was one of my big takeaways was, yes, I want to, what do I want to do? More powerful, straight, accurate stroke. And then how do I actually take that on to where it's not discouraging as, compete. Ultimately, we're only competing with ourselves. And that's the thing we got to remember. We're only competing with ourselves.
And for anybody out there listening to the podcast who maybe question whether or not it was a smart idea to bring Demetrius on, I hope that you realize through that he actually knows what we're talking about. And Rob and I are just a bunch of schmucks. That's so articulate.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you.
I get to be the bear for once. Yeah. I've always wanted to be the bear.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, a lot of the things you see players that are learning how to play and the consistently similar mistakes that they make, when they don't pocket a ball, or when they don't, they're not thinking right or whatever. I kind of wanted to get your take a little bit on, I noticed that players, they have a certain amount of time that they take on every shot. It's kind of like the pace that they play. Mm-hmm. But no matter what that pace is, you can always tell when somebody doesn't want to shoot a shot. They just don't want to. They've only got one shot to shoot. You know, maybe they got two options, terrible and terrible, and then they got the bad option. And the bad option is the one they should shoot over the two terrible ones, and they don't want to shoot it. And they will stand there and look at that shot forever.
Yeah.
And they will chalk up 15 times. Go back and look at it again. Go to the other side of the table and back and forth and back. I've seen this in the some of the matches I've watched. And it's a simple fact that they don't want to shoot it. They'd rather pass the shot. What do you do? I have felt that myself when I've been playing a competition. Like, I, you know, this shot is so shitty, I just don't want to pull the trigger because I know it's not going to end up good.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you just,
yeah,
in your heart of hearts, like, you know, okay, well, I really can't beat Shane today, maybe not ever, but, you know, so you get that picture in your head. Well, it's the same thing. You're faced with, what, a 90-degree cut down a rail, rail-to-rail shot or a bank. Neither one you want to do. Not really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's 100 different ways I could go from here that I wish I could go 100 directions at once, because I've got many things I could say. But ultimately, I'll tell you the funny part about that is a lot of times, especially at the amateur level, what gets me is that the same person that spends 5 minutes lining up their kick shot, if you back up two shots, they were freewheeling around the table and then they carelessly hooked themselves. And now they're going to spend 5 minutes to line up the kick. I'm like, well, if you spent five extra seconds making sure you didn't get behind that ball, I'll never understand it. But so that's the first thing is that, you know, most of the time, you know, it's like when you look at a key shot or something where there's a tough shot or a tough situation, you know, it's like matches are not one game long. They're a race or they're a longer set. And it's like there's all these little things that happen during the match. And then the fact that you happen to miss a certain shot and get eliminated, that's not necessarily why you lost the match. It's because you missed that shot. Even if it's hill-hill, it's like, oh, it's hill-hill and I missed this eight ball. It's like, yeah, but you had a lot of different shots throughout the match. Why are we blaming the loss on that eight ball? Why don't we look at other shots that, you know, because again, in pool, there's going to be hard shots. There's going to be easier shots. And so dwelling on a difficult opportunity that slipped away doesn't seem as practical to me as saying, what are some of the opportunities I think I should have been able to convert on at a higher level? And then what can I learn from those so that I can, you know, not put myself in a spot where I got to make a hero shot on the hill? How can I convert so I actually win 9-5 and use my routine opportunities? And, you know, there's so many different ways I could answer that, but I just ultimately, and then part of it too, I said I wasn't getting into goals. Another time we can talk about that or whatever, but I'll tell you, I think it's part of it is what is your goal? Because if your goal is to win or to pocket the ball, then the reason why people stall out is because they don't know that they can win. They don't know they can pocket this ball, and then that means that they might not win. And so they're at this impasse where it's like, well, I can't do – you know, so we talk about result goals versus process goals. And if they have a result goal and they can't accomplish that result, then they freeze because they're like, well, this – I don't know what to do. But if you have a process goal and you say, you know what, I'm not here to win. I'm not here to pocket everything. What I'm here to do is, you know, keep a good attitude, have fun facing the adversity of the day. I'm here to challenge myself against the table. I'm here to put a good stroke on things. I'm here to make good decisions and make every opportunity count. You know, well, that I can do. And so, and maybe you're not thinking about all that consciously. Maybe you review these things, you know, ahead of the match to make sure you're in the right state of mind. I know before one of my matches, I remember I boiled it down to where my key thoughts for the match was I just wanted to breathe, swing and enjoy. I wanted to take deep breaths to stay relaxed.
That's really good.
I wanted to swing my arm, and what I mean by swing is I wanted to put like a little extra stank on it, like instead of a decelerating stroke where you're trying to pocket speed wobble balls in, like, no, I'm gonna commit and just go ahead and swing through the ball, and then I'm gonna enjoy. I'm going to enjoy how tough the game is. And if I miss and lose, well, then, there's nowhere I'd rather be than out here crying.
Well, I think when you watch guys like Omar stroke the ball for a whole set like that, close up and personal like you did, that's exactly what you're seeing.
Yeah, and so what I would say is the point is that those are some examples of process goals. I'm going to breathe, I'm going to swing, I'm going to enjoy. and whatever comes my way, that's what I'm going to do. And then when I have a tough spot and it's hill and I get myself in a pickle and I have a shot I can't make, well, I might not make it. I might lose. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to breathe. I'm going to swing, and I'm going to enjoy trying. And then if it doesn't go, it doesn't go. And I'll you know, go back to the drawing board and keep working on my game. And sure. So anyway, what I would say is that when you see people freeze up, those would be the things that my mind goes to is why didn't they, why did they put themselves in the spot? And why are they focused on results during a match when they should be focused on process? And what can they learn from the other things they did wrong that set besides missing a Hail Mary?
Yeah, I look at it's a Hail Mary is what it is for sure. As our human nature to put off whatever it is we're not going to like the results of. You can turn the corner. You know, if you turn left, somebody's going to smack you in the face. You turn right, they're going to hit you in the neck. You know, you're not going to want to turn either one of those ways. The result from a rail to rail center diamond from short rail to short rail cut over in either one of the corners or banked is you're going to like the outcome of that, what, 1 out of 100 times maybe. So you got to know that going in. So why avoid that? You know, why make it last longer? Why chalk up 10 times when it's human nature to do that? I want to take myself, and I do take myself, and I slap myself when I'm doing that. And I'm just go, what the heck? It's just a game. Shoot the ball. Don't worry about it. And I want to say the same thing, and I have at times to opponents. And I've been basically told to shut up in matches where I said, listen, you got to shoot the shot. You can't pass. So just shoot it.
Well, that's the thing about it is that one thing that I think is funny is I think, the mental game is a very neglected subject because pool players, you can go on YouTube and you can watch how the top players play physically, but you don't really understand how they think. You don't really understand how they approach the game, what thoughts go through their mind, what their outlook is and things like this. And so I think that's to me, and some players don't even believe that the mental game's important. They're just like, yeah, it's whatever, new age, hogwash, I'll just hit balls.
Come on, it's big time.
Well, other people think that it's important, but then they go about it really, really backwards. And I think one of the things that I did fairly well at Derby, I have done okay in my, given the talent and resources I have, I've done well. And I think that my mental game is very good. And it's not by default. It's like I've worked hard and learned a lot. Anyway, so the point is I think that a lot of these players, nobody's ever taught them how to think. And so it's almost like if you buy a computer, it has default settings where how big the font is or how big the icons are. And you can change those things, but out of the box, it comes a certain way. I think that as competitors, we grow up in this country and we're socialized and we all have this certain way of thinking about competition that's not necessarily optimal. But most players have never really taken the time to learn how to reprogram and how to adjust their settings. And so most players, when you see people freezing up and a lot of different things that people do, to me, it's just normal because, yeah, it's probably a suboptimal outlook that nobody's really – they've never realized that there's a different way of approaching competition.
Talk more about that. I think listeners will be interested in all the input you have in that area. From being on the stage, the big stage. Nate and I have been on little stages. You've the last few years have been on the big stage. So,
We all face pressure though. Whatever.
It is. Yeah. You're in league on league night on Wednesday night with your bar team.
Yeah.
And you're on a team and you're the guy to go to. There, I'll tell you what, with your family watching and everybody else on a little bar table, there's a lot of pressure there.
And I'll tell you what, one thing that I like to share with people because, some players never get an opportunity to go play pro tournaments, or if they did, they wouldn't be competitive. And so they might not know this. But for anybody that's discouraged because, hey, I'll never be able to play in pro tournaments or, whatever, and that's sad. What I can tell you is I can tell you firsthand, having played by myself in my pool room as a kid and in my basement and having played leagues and having played tournaments and having played with the pros, I can tell you that it's no different. There might be a difference in how good your opponents are. There might be a difference in terms of how many people are watching or how much money you're playing for. But if you're in a spot where you're at the table and all of a sudden a normally runnable rack in this moment looks almost unrunnable. And it just looks like a big Mount Everest in front of you, and you have no idea how you're going to do it, but you really want to get the job done. And things slow down, and you take deep breaths, and you dig deep and transform yourself into the kind of animal that can do what needs to be done and put the balls in the hole. And the next thing you know, everything, you're in the moment, and you do what's in front of you, and you come to, and you realize you just did it. Like, if you go through experiences like that, then that's all there is. There's nothing else in pool that you're missing by not playing at a higher level. There might be bigger tournament wins, or there might be bigger name drops about who you beat, but ultimately there's no more pure experience you can gain from pool than what you can get in your local league or in your local weekly tournament.
Here I see a couple of Wisconsin players who are not professionals at all, who finished in the money in the nine ball, John Demet and Chad Elston.
Yep.
From Wisconsin, two players finished in the same category as Shane McMinn, Alex Olinger, Danny Olson, Dan Louie, Jeremy Jones, Rob Hart, Roberto Gomez, all these guys finished in about that same spot. So these guys put out a tremendous effort. Just good Wisconsin players go down there and jump on the table with these hot shots and play well.
Yeah, I like to see it. And Derby's a great place to do it. And, it's a funny format, too, because, you can get a really, really patty cake draw and find your way into the money without too much opposition.
Uh-huh.
You could also, like, in the banks, what happened to me in the banks was pretty funny. I played, I won my first match. My second match, I drew Skylar Woodward, and the guy beat me in, like, 10 minutes. My third match, I played Max Everly, which is a really tough third round, and I actually beat Max 3-0.
You did, huh?
And then my fourth round, I drew Alex Pagulayan, and he beat me in 15 minutes. And I'm like, man, I was playing good. It didn't even, anyway. So my
sure.
point is that in the one pocket of the nine ball, I got better draws and I was able to use them a little bit.
But
so,
how fun to play those guys. I mean, you're not going to go up to those guys and ask them to play money match with you.
No.
How perfect is the tournament?
It'd be a lot more fun to play them in round eight.
So, I hear you. I hear you. Oh, yeah, it would.
The point is that there's a lot of variance in tournament pool. But that being said, like with John and Chad, I played them both. I know them both. And yeah, I saw Chad out there. I knew John was out there. I didn't see him. But anyway, I'm glad that they're both out there competing.
Like this format rather than like just a regular draw and a double elimination? You like this random draw tournament and you go by round elimination?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's whatever the rules are, it's like, They make the rules. I just show up and play, and I don't really have a strong preference. I think that the only thing I'd say is, like, as long as it's not round robin. I mean, we've seen enough goofy stuff with fixing matches and stuff, so you can't do round robin. But other than that, I do think it's interesting because it's different than what you're used to, and it adds a sense of suspense because you don't really know. If your next match, it could literally be the worst player in the tournament, or it could be Josh Filler, and you just never know. And every time you refresh your phone to see who you're going to play, it's like, well, let's see what it is. And then you refresh and you're like, it's Alex Pagulayan.
All right. Oh boy, yeah. Here we go. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind jumping in at this point too.
Go ahead.
I think that, this type
are
of,
you the host?
I don't even know.
We were having a pretty nice conversation, Nate.
Well, I drank a lot of wine in that amount of time. Should I just stay back and drink some more?
yeah, come on, buddy.
But no, I do want to say something on that because the Derby City Classic, I don't think you can find anybody in the world who isn't going to say that isn't the second most important tournament in all of the United States. It's takes a backseat to the U.S. Open, but it is, I think, by far the second most important tournament in the entire United States. And I really honestly think that if the right people were in charge of the Derby City Classic, this would be a marketing genius of a tournament. Just picture this. Every single one of these rounds, they live stream to Facebook, and they actually do a type of Powerball type drawing with every single one of every player has a name on a little ping pong ball. It goes through the entire, blowing process, and one comes out, the second one comes out, those two play each other. Like, you can live stream this to Facebook. You know everybody that you're playing in real time. It's exciting. It's fast-paced. And, like, why wouldn't that be the coolest thing in the entire world? I think that there are some marketing opportunities that the Derby City Classic misses out on that really could make this even more entertaining instead of just refreshing your phone and, you know, looking at, oh, okay, I play this person, cool. So I'd be interested to hear what you think about that, Demetrius.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's I'm not a, when it comes to tournament promotion, you know, I've always just played and let other people, let the adults make the decisions. I just play. But no, I mean, I could definitely see how some of those things would be really suspenseful. You know, and another thing would be kind of funny would be, like, I was just picturing myself, like, you know, going up to my table, like they call me to table 17. I get up there and then all of a sudden you're playing one of the following people. And all of a sudden, like 10 players get up and it's like, you know, you got like Filler and Shane, and then you've got like a couple of guys I don't know and some weaker players. And then like, it's almost like some Survivor where one by one, they step back until I'm like, you know, like,
that would be pretty funny.
I'm just gasping and panting, like, you know, like, anyway.
Now, yeah, but I think that the uniqueness of the Derby City Classic really allows for a lot of wiggle room when it comes to doing really unique, creative marketing ploys that builds interest and builds content around the actual tournament itself. But that's maybe coming from somebody who's paralysis by analysis, I think is what, I think that's probably the situation I'm stuck in right now with the unique part of where the podcast is at. So, but yeah. I think that would be exciting.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, we are now 42 minutes into this podcast, and I have decided that I'm going to actually stop this one at this point, and we are going to have this episode in a two-part series. I think we've
perfect.
Got... yeah, I think we've
perfect,
gotten...
Perfect, because I got more questions.
Well, if you got more questions, you're going to have to wait till next week, because we got to get a regular episode in yet still. But so we will cut this one off at this point, and we will start up the actual weekly analysis of the podcast. Hopefully that's okay with you, Demetrius.
Yep, that's fine.
So I guess at this point we will cut this off. And but before we do, we will say that if any of the listeners have liked any of the stuff that they've heard from Demetrius, part of why you are actually joining the podcast, one, because you want to obviously help the game grow and you see the podcast as being a good motive for that. But you also are going to kind of put yourself up there on a platform to kind of explore opportunities at kind of putting yourself out there and what you can offer as far as the boot camp, since you are going to be doing this full time. So if any of the listeners have liked what they've heard and want to inquire about additional potential boot camps in the future, either that or just maybe want to actually just commit to it right now, how do they get some way of getting in contact with you?
Yeah, it's very simple. Just, you can go to my website, MN, like Minnesota, foolbootcamp.com, www.mnfoolbootcamp.com. And yeah, I appreciate, I've been contacted by a few of your listeners, and I'd like to talk, I mean, anybody that's listening to a pool podcast, like, let's go. Why aren't you guys out at Derby, you know, with me? And so let's do this.
I guess with that, we will cut it off here and we will start it up again. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Q Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com, and Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.